Hello, I'm Michelle Hanratty. Thank you for listening to Sound Optometry. Just a reminder that you will no longer receive a CPD point by listening to this episode of the podcast. But if you subscribe and listen to the most recent episodes of Sound Optometry, you can gain CPD points. I hope you enjoy this episode of Sound Optometry. Hello, welcome to Sound Optometry, the new podcast from Docket that provides high-quality continuing education and training for all UK-registered optometrists. You can gain one CET point by listening to this podcast and completing the exercise on our website, docket.info. I'm Michelle Hanratty. I'm an independent prescribing optometrist and I've been in practice for over 20 years, starting off in retail optometry on the high street with a multiple, before moving on to working in laser eye clinics and finally ending up in hospital optometry, which is where I am now. I've also been involved in the training and education of optometrists of all levels for rather a long time, and I'm still very active in the college's scheme for registration, both as an examiner and an assessor. Each month, with case studies and in-depth conversations, we'll be exploring the topics that matter the most to us optometrists. And this month is papilledema. Papilledema is a condition where an increase in intracranial pressure causes the optic nerve head to swell. It is not a common condition, but referrals for neuro-ophthalmology assessment for suspect papilledema have increased in recent years. This might have something to do with the case of Honey Rose. As a quick reminder, producer and science journalist Izzy Clark is going to take us through what happened.
In February 2012, optometrist Honey Rose carried out a routine sight test on 8-year-old Vincent Barker. Unfortunately, she failed to detect papilledema, which was due to a build-up of fluid in his brain. Vincent subsequently died 5 months later in July 2012. Now, Honey Rose was convicted of gross negligence manslaughter in 2016, but she was then later cleared on appeal. It was the failure to make the correct diagnosis that led to the conviction being overturned, and the Court of Appeal judges ruled that it was a serious breach of duty, but it did not constitute the crime of which she was convicted. And then it was left to the General Optical Council to determine fitness to practice.
This sequence of events had a huge impact, as it was the first time criminal charges for gross negligence manslaughter had been brought against an optometrist. It was a real shock to the profession, and as a result, optometrists became more cautious, and their referrals to ophthalmology spiked, with some hospitals anecdotally reporting a threefold increase. Shortly, we'll be speaking with neuro-ophthalmologist Naz Roof to delve deeper into papilledema. But first, Izzy met with Louise Watkins, an optometrist who detected a case in a 10-year-old girl in autumn 2019.
When the little girl's mum phoned into the practice, she mentioned that for several weeks now, her daughter had been complaining of some blurred vision, and that in the preceding week, she had started to notice that her daughter was almost closing one of her eyes subconsciously. Because her daughter wasn't due for an eye test yet, she needed to be seen through the minor eye condition service.
Okay, and then this young patient comes in. What did you do?
She was a previous patient of the practice, so I was lucky enough to be able to look back at previous records, and I could see that she hadn't been prescribed glasses before, had a very good level of vision. So really the next step was just to try and get a little bit more detail about exactly the sort of symptoms that she was experiencing. To that effect, I started to ask her a little bit more about this blurred vision. So from how she then began to describe it to me, it sounded more like a ghost image or a second image that she was seeing. I questioned her about her general health, which at that time appeared to be quite normal. So the next step was to have a look at what she was actually able to see on the letter chart. And she was actually able to read to almost to the bottom of the letter chart with each eye. When I performed the cover test, I could see that she appeared to have a right eye esotropia or a turn inwards. At this point, I did check back into our previous records that she was recorded as having no turn in the eye at all. So this was something that made me think quite hard, that something was changing, something was different here.
Okay, so a bit of a red flag is going up at that point. Did papilledema even cross your mind?
To be honest, it didn't actually at that point in time. My track of thought was probably more down the route that maybe she was just a child who had always been a little bit long-sighted and for one reason or another maybe wasn't coping so well at that moment in time, and that's why she was getting these symptoms. So although we perhaps wouldn't usually do it as part of a minor eye conditions appointment, I did a quick refraction which confirmed that there really wasn't any significant prescription there. So the next step was then to do a Volk ophthalmoscopy assessment using a slit lamp. And I have to say, I got a really unpleasant surprise when I looked into her eyes. There was no questioning that we had a significant case of papilledema. What I found was significantly swollen and raised disc margins. There was no doubt that the disc was raised, and I looked for maybe a little longer than I would have done usually to try and gather my thoughts, because 101 things then go through your mind about, okay, what are we going to do next? How am I going to break this news? How am I going to do it in a calm and controlled manner without committing to any possible diagnosis or prognosis, but also making sure that they were able to get the help that they needed as soon as we possibly could.
And what are those next steps? If you think you're dealing with a case of papilledema, as an optometrist that picks this up, what did you do?
I explained what the next steps would be, where they would need to attend. And then I wrote a referral letter.
And what was the diagnosis? How did things turn out?
After a few days had passed, I picked up the phone and I got through straight to Mom, who'd actually just left her daughter's bedside. She'd been seen in their neurology department and she was actually expecting to go down to surgery for a brain tumour the next day.
And do we know how this young patient's doing now?
They were able to remove the vast majority of the tumour and it hadn't become too entangled in other brain tissue. So overall, an absolutely fantastic and amazing recovery.
It's a relief to hear that the patient is doing so well, and it highlights how important it is to have a high standard of care across the whole practice team and to know those all important indicators. Let's take a bigger look at this. With me is neuro-ophthalmologist Naz Rauf from Moorfields Eye Hospital in London. How common is papilledema?
Well, referrals for papilledema are very common, but I don't think there's any doubt that we've seen a recent sharp increase in referrals after the high-profile community case that we've already discussed. An elevated disc from a benign cause is much commoner than papilledema. We have published some data from our emergency department at Moorfields Eye Hospital looking at children referred. And what we found was that over 6 months of consecutive referrals, we had 61 children referred for suspicious optic nerve head appearances. Only 3 of these had any significant underlying intracranial cause. And 29 of these children were completely asymptomatic.
So optometrists still have a low threshold for referrals when it comes to suspect papilledema then. So Naz, what are the hallmark symptoms of papilledema?
The most common symptom is a headache. And classically, this is something that's worse in the morning, or it can even wake people up from sleep. It can be all around the head, and often it can go behind the eyes as well. The problem is that headache is very common. If you ask patients with papilledema if they have headache, then 90% of them will say that they do. But lots of patients have headache and don't have papilledema, so we can't rely on this symptom. In terms of visual problems, it's actually unusual to have significant visual loss from papilledema unless it's in a very advanced stage. Sometimes patients can complain that their vision feels a little bit blurred. Otherwise, one thing that patients do describe is something that's called transient visual obscurations. And essentially, this is where your vision can become greyed out or go for up to a minute. And it's thought that this is due to problems of the optic nerve not receiving enough blood supply, becoming a bit ischemic due to the effects of the edema. The other symptom that patients can complain of is sometimes they can notice a whooshing or something called pulsatile tinnitus in their ears. And we think that this is caused by the raised pressure causing the venous sinuses to be narrowed and causing turbulence. As was described in the case that we heard about, sometimes people can have a squint develop. Typically, this is a convergent squint and people can complain of horizontal double vision. And the reason for this is that your sixth nerve actually travels along the base of the skull. So in simple terms, if you have a rise in your pressure inside your head, it can squash the sixth nerve across the base of the skull and stop it working properly. And that can be something that's really useful to ask about. And finally, people with papilledema are often unwell, and in association with the headache, they can complain of nausea and vomiting, particularly in the morning.
So when an optometrist suspects papilledema, what clinical signs does the optometrist need to look for?
So you'll always check someone's vision. The vision, as we've said, is often preserved in the early stages of papilledema, and it's not really till you get to advanced papilledema where the vision will go down. So if you see that, that's really concerning. It's very useful to check colour vision because it's often normal in the early stages. Usually both eyes are affected. And because both eyes are affected, you often do not see a relative afferent pupillary defect. The pupil reactions are normal. The hallmark of papilledema is a swollen disc. And typically papilledema starts in the nasal part of the disc and progresses. The disc margins will become indistinct, and the disc will become elevated with an increased disc diameter. When you examine the veins, you will see that they can become very tortuous and often dilated. The other thing is, it's important to look at the vessels at the disc because the edema that happens due to papilledema can cause the blood vessels to become obscured, and that can be a really useful sign to identify the condition. The other thing that can be really useful to look for is something called Peyton's lines, which are folds that can occur in the retina and the choroid around the disc. They're chorioretinal folds. And sometimes they can be present in quite early stages of papilledema. So if you see those, that might tip you towards looking for papilledema rather than some of the other conditions that can mimic it. And of course, you should check a visual field. Although vision isn't affected early, sometimes the blind spot can be enlarged. And then after that, the nasal visual field can start to be affected. It's also important to look at the motility of the eyes. So if the patient can't move their eye out fully, if they can't abduct it, again, that might tell you that something else is going on.
Can I just ask you a little bit about the colour vision testing? In practice, quite often we have the Ishihara or we have the City Colour test. Is there a better test than those when we suspect papilledema? So for example, the red dot test, would that be worth digging out and using?
Do you know, I think it's important to use what you've got to hand because I'd rather people did it than didn't do the test. And actually, even in the clinic, in my neuro-ophthalmology clinic, we still use Ishihara colour plates.
Right.
And the useful thing there is, for instance, you could have a patient who's got swollen nerves because of an inflammatory cause, something like optic neuritis. And in those patients, their colour vision will be reduced, whereas in papilledema, the colour vision is often normal at the early stages. So it's just to help you differentiate the causes.
And you also mentioned the folds around the optic nerve head. So with Peyton's lines then, are they easy to see with normal fundoscopy or do you need a specialist piece of equipment like an OCT?
Well, you can see them, just even on your normal slit lamp examination with your lens. Sometimes they can be easier to see if you take a colour image or if you undertake an OCT. So when you take an OCT image, you'll get a red-free image and you can often see them on that. The other thing is OCT can be really useful anyway for papilledema and trying to detect what cases represent true papilledema. If you take your OCT of your disc, you can do a peripapillary retinal nerve fibre layer measurement and you will see that in papilledema that increases. And of course, we find that particularly useful in the hospital setting when we're monitoring people, because sometimes if you have somebody with very early papilledema, you might not see very much change on that. But you bring the patient back a few weeks later and repeat the test and you will find that their retinal nerve fibre layer thickness increases. So it can be a really useful tool. And of course, lots of optometrists now have some access to that.
Yes, OCT is a lot more common. So if you are a little bit suspicious or if you see someone for the first time that has perhaps a tilted disc, maybe they're hypermetropic, it's a good idea to take it as a baseline then. And if they have any symptoms, to bring them back and then retake the image.
I think that's a very sensible approach. I think it's all about your clinical judgment, really. And if you as an optometrist feel that their symptoms are, you know, perhaps this isn't a normal migraine or their normal headache, if they've got a new headache, then I don't think it's unreasonable to ask them to go and see their GP. But if perhaps they're one of these asymptomatic people and you've got access to that, then yeah, you could do an OCT looking at the retinal nerve fiber layer thickness around the disc, bring them back a few weeks later. And if nothing's changed, I think that can be quite reassuring.
You're listening to Sound Optometry with me, Michelle Hanratty. Every month, we'll be exploring the topics that matter the most to us optometrists. And that's where we want to hear from you. You can email us at podcast@docket.info or tweet @soundoptometry. And don't forget, you can gain one CET point by listening to this podcast and completing the exercise on our website, docket.info. Back to papilledema edema with Naz Rauf, a consultant ophthalmologist from Moorfields Eye Hospital, is still here with me. So far, we've discussed the signs and symptoms that optometrists need to know about when it comes to making a tentative diagnosis. We heard about the young girl earlier who was diagnosed with a brain tumour, but what else could have caused papilledema edema?
I think of three key things that I absolutely don't want to miss. The first, as you've said, is a tumour or some other lump in the brain. So that's number one. The second thing I think about is something called a venous sinus thrombosis, which is essentially a blood clot in one of the venous sinuses that exists within the brain. These areas are really important because the arachnoid granulations that absorb your CSF live there. So if you have a clot in one of your venous sinuses, then you don't absorb your cerebrospinal fluid, your CSF as well, and your pressure goes up around your brain. So it's very important to pick this up because if you've had a clot within your brain, you could have a clot somewhere else as well. So you've got to think of the things that can cause people real severe harm first. Having said that, the commonest condition that I see, particularly in adults, children are a little bit different. In adults, I'm thinking of something called idiopathic intracranial hypertension, which essentially means the pressure's gone up around your brain, but we don't have an identifiable cause for it. For people who are interested, they can look up the diagnostic criteria, which is something called the modified Dandy criteria. The people that are particularly at risk for getting this are women between the ages of about 20 to 40, so childbearing age women. Maybe 5% of people who have this condition are men. But it's also associated with having a recent weight gain.
Communication is a core competency for optometrists, and empathy is an absolute must when we're trying to communicate potentially bad news. So when a patient comes to you, having been referred to by an optometrist, they're already a little bit concerned. So how do you go about explaining the causes of their symptoms without actually causing too much anxiety or stress?
Well, you know, I think that's actually quite tricky, particularly out in the community, because you're making these diagnoses or telling people that they might have very something seriously wrong with them. And it's not something, true papilledema, I don't think something that most optometrists have some experience of. But you have a lot of experience of seeing discs that are just a bit unusual and you want perhaps a second opinion on. So some of it depends on the clinical context that you've got. If you have somebody in front of you that clearly has the red flags or is worrying, then they need to be told very clearly, you need to go to an emergency department to have somebody see you. However, I don't think that's many of the patients that we have. And it's really those other patients where you think, oh, I'm not sure if this disc is normal or not, and you may just want a second opinion. So I think what you say to people in that scenario is, well, I've seen your nerve appearance. It looks a bit unusual. In a small minority of cases, this can be associated with something more significant. And there's lots of causes for this, and they are treatable. I would like to go and get another opinion, somebody who sees this a lot more than I do. So I recommend that you go and see either your GP to get a referral, or I'll write a referral to the eye department. But I think it's kind of keeping it within context and saying, you know, if things get worse, if you have the red flags that we talked about, then go to A&E and let somebody see you.
So I think for me, the key thing that you've said so far is that it's treatable. And therefore, if it's treatable and caught early, the prognosis is probably quite good. So I think that in itself is quite reassuring. And I think I would find it much easier to talk to patients knowing that most of the conditions that cause papilledema are actually treatable.
Well, yeah, most conditions that cause papilledema are treatable. And there will be the very rare scenario where you've got a very severe brain tumour that isn't treatable. But even a lot of the brain tumours that cause you to have raised intracranial pressure, which is, of course, what everybody thinks about. Many of those are treatable, and the earlier you catch them, the better.
So when a patient does come to you in hospital having been referred, what tests do you do to diagnose papilledema or to investigate the causes of papilledema?
It's actually pretty straightforward for most patients. The first thing we would do is organise usually a CT of their head, because that will tell you very quickly if someone's got a large tumour or a lump in their head that's causing intracranial pressure to rise. And you'll see that quickly. At the same time as I do a CT, I would do a CT venogram. And what that means is that you're looking at where the venous sinuses are in the brain just to make sure that the patient doesn't have a venous sinus thrombosis. And once those two things are satisfactory, you need to think about doing a lumbar puncture. So this is the thing that all the patients absolutely hate. And essentially, this involves inserting a needle around the spine into the area where the cerebrospinal fluid lives and using a manometer to check the pressure around the spine and therefore the brain, because your CSF is in continuation around your brain and your spine. And that will tell you if their pressure is up.
So once you've done that investigation, how would you go about treating it?
Well, the first thing you'd want to do is treat any urgent cause. So if your tests show that you've got a brain tumour, then that patient goes very rapidly to neurosurgery for management of that. If you find that the patient on their venogram has a venous sinus thrombosis, then again, that patient gets anticoagulated. So we thin the blood to stop the clot getting bigger and allow time for it to resolve. And then the intracranial pressure will naturally come down as the fluid can drain better through the sinus again.
To finish off, can you share your top tips for optometrists that are out there at the coalface in primary eye care?
One of the key things is to think about causes of pseudopapilledema. So where the disc looks as though it's swollen, but it actually isn't. Most common of those being perhaps optic nerve head drusen. So we know that drusen are globular collections of protein and calcium salts that can live with or develop within an optic nerve. And they can be buried quite deep in the disc. So they can give the appearance that the disc is swollen. Now, we've said headaches very common. Actually, drusen are as well, and they can occur in 1% to 2% of the population. But when you see a patient who's got drusen, they don't have the unusual dilated, tortuous blood vessels that we described in papilledema. They don't have the blood vessels being obscured because of edema at the disc. You can have very rarely hemorrhages, but I think if you see a hemorrhage at the disc in the context of a swollen disc, I think it's entirely reasonable to get a second opinion on that. Don't forget really straightforward things like being pretty hypermetropic. If you're hypermetropic, your eye is generally smaller than average, if you like. So because you've got a smaller eye, the opening at the back of the eye where the optic nerve is, i.e. where your ganglion cell fibres leave the eye, that's going to be smaller than somebody who's myopic and has a bigger eye. So that means that you'll have more optic nerve fibres in a smaller area, so the nerve will appear more full.
So if I see a patient who has got a slightly suspicious disc, and as you said, we see lots of very unusual looking discs, but the patient is completely asymptomatic, we probably shouldn't be reaching for the referral pad straight away and referring them to A&E. We should be thinking about the differentials first. So things like disc drusen, a tilted disc, before I think going down the worst case scenario and scaring ourselves and our patients.
Well, I think that's a very reasonable way forward. So yes, think about the other conditions that can mimic papilledema in the complete absence of symptoms. And if you're worried, bring them back in a few weeks, because if it is papilledema, it will change and you will see things progress.
I always think that the best thing to say to patients if you're not sure about something is to always tell them to come back to you or phone the practice if anything changes. So that way they know that you're keeping an eye on them.
Yes, and I think it's just a question of letting them know about some of the symptoms, but again, without overstressing it, because as we said, things like headache are so common. And once you tell patients that you're worried about something, and here are the symptoms, you'll often find that in their anxiety, they might develop some of those symptoms, which is a completely human thing to do. We all do that. But as I said, I think it's giving them that kind of safety net that, yes, I'm going to see you again. It's really just to reassure both you and me that this is all there is, and I don't think there's anything else going on. And that way, you're very safe.
Naz Roof, thank you very much. And thank you for listening to Sound Optometry. If you would like more information about papilledema, go to our website, docket.info, and simply click on the sound optometry button to find the reading materials. Listening to this podcast and completing the short exercise will gain one CET point covering communication, standards of practice, and ocular disease. We'd really appreciate it if you spread the word about the new podcast. Tell your colleagues to listen, or better still, subscribe so you don't miss an episode. If there's a topic or question you want us to cover, then email podcast@docket.info or tweet @soundoptometry. I'm Michelle Hanratty, and thanks for listening.